Hello, hockey fans. It is Tuesday, February 27th, 2018, and welcome to this week's episode of From the Press Box here on the AHL Report. I'm your host, Amy Johnson, the lead correspondent here at the AHL Report covering the Laval Rocket, and I'm joined each and every week, of course, by my fabulous and knowledgeable co-host, the editor-in-chief of all of the Rocket Sports media magazines and brands, Mr. Rick Stevens. Welcome.
Glad to be here, and glad that we're both here, and glad that all of our team, the Rocket Sports team, made it through the trade deadline without us having to ship anybody out, you know?
Whew! I'm sweating it, you know? You're just sweating it, because you just don't know. You never know.
No, you don't. Just don't.
I think everyone today is on a bit of trade deadline day hangover. Everyone's probably a little worse for wear, and it doesn't help when the Canadians decide to play a game on the same night as the trade deadline. And of course they were playing against the Philadelphia Flyers, which meant I was obligated to watch, especially since Charlie Lindgren was in net. And so it's a long day yesterday. It was a long day. But
emotional.
It was. You know, Habs Flyers games are never easy for me to watch. Most of the time, if it's just a regular game, I can sort of root for the Canadians. But Flyers were jostling for first place in the Metropolitan Division, which made me, the fan in me, you know, kind of inch that way a little more. But then I had to go and put Charlie Lindgren in net, and I can't root against Charlie Lindgren. So I prayed to the hockey gods yesterday. I said, okay, listen, I need the Flyers to win, but I need them to be gentle on Charlie Lindgren. Don't light him up. Could the Canadians defense please come, you know, protect him? And I have to say, there is such a thing as the hockey gods, because could it not have worked out any better? He had a shutout. Actually, both goalies had a shutout last night, and the Flyers still got the 2 points that they needed to vault them in the first place in the division. So yes, I was quite emotional last night.
But it had nothing to do with the Flyers being gentle on Charlie Lindgren.
Well, no,
they ran him a couple of times. Lindblom was in his kitchen. They you know, full on offensive attack, and particularly in overtime, it was Charlie Lindgren himself. The saves,
save
he made on Giroux was unbelievable in overtime.
Was incredible. Yes, and I duly yelled at every Philadelphia Flyer at my television every time they jammed into his crease and knocked him around, and said, "Knock it off. No hurting Charlie Lindgren." But it worked out.
Have we started the show yet? Was this on the agenda?
I don't know. I don't think it was. Basically, the moral of the story today is I think everybody survived trade deadline day. And we're going to get into some trade deadline talk here in a little bit. We have a full show yet again for you this week. We're going to start, of course, with a Rocket report. They were on the road for 2 games last weekend, one of which we attended in person in Utica. And there's a different theme to our Rocket report this week in the sense of wins, which is quite good to get to say. So we're gonna break down how their weekend went. We're gonna talk about some injury updates. We're gonna talk about the fact that Nikita Sherbak was down for a couple of games, and in addition to that, we're gonna talk about how the trade deadline and what the Montreal Canadiens and Marc Bergevin did at the trade deadline affected the Laval Rockets. There's some roster changes that we need to talk about. Then we're going to switch gears, head over to the AHL in general. We're going to talk about the player of the week. Take a brief look at how the playoff picture in the AHL is starting to take shape as we approach the first day of March here in a couple of days. And so things, as we get down the stretch here, the playoff picture is really starting to shape up. I believe we have some some journeys to take in a favorite, fan favorite segment called Where Are They Now? And then we're going to get to top five. And top five this week is not so much a top five, more than just kind of like a five thoughts on the trade deadline. Rick and I are both just going to talk about, you know, a few points in general that we took away from trade deadline day 2018 in general. So you won't want to miss that. And we, of course, want to hear your input on how you thought trade deadline day overall across the league went yesterday. So Rick, let's start with the Laval Rocket, and holy cow, not only did they win on Friday, they won in Utica, and then they won again the next night. I mean, pinch me. I don't remember the last time they won back to back games, and it's quite exciting to see them performing.
Well, and going into Utica, Utica was on fire. I think at the time of our last broadcast, I had said that they had run the table on 16 straight games without a regulation loss.
Right.
Then they ran into a stumble last week before facing the Rocket. But that's a tough rink to go into. And for Laval, always an intense game and a tough rink to come away with a victory.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great game. Maybe not such a great first period. They were outshot in the first period, 11-6. But
they didn't give up any goals in the first period either.
Well, that's true too. And Michael McNiven was in net. He looked pretty good. But it was early in the second period. Chris Terry, having just returned to the lineup after being out for some time with injury. And potted his 21st of the season, and that got them underway. And a few minutes later, it was Jordan Boucher. And before the period's over, Chris Terry gets another one. Actually, Michael McNiven got an assist on that.
Fed
it to learn out with a long lead pass. And Chris Terry, usually you expect Chris Terry, the one-timer, but a really nice move on the breakaway. To Deke Demko. And 3-0 after the second period. And just kind of, who is this team?
Absolutely. And they continued that into the third. They sat back a little bit in the third, but they didn't give up. And the third has been the place where, you know, okay, now they come into the third. They have a 3-0 lead. They did, as you'll hear Sylvain Lefebvre say in a clip that I have from him here in a minute, they knew Utica wasn't going to pack their bags and go home in the third period. They knew Utica was going to come out firing on all cylinders and trying to get back into things. And they started to. They scored two goals in the third period, but the Rocket kept on the gas pedal this time and capitalized on their chances and finished and ended up winning that one 5-2. It was, and you could feel, Rick, as we were waiting outside the dressing room, after the game and even after we were speaking with some of the players, you could feel the mood had shifted. You could feel a little bit of that weight was lifted off. Okay, we won a game and we won a game against a tough divisional opponent. And it was really nice to feel that kind of morale shift a little bit.
Well, 3-0 after the second period, and in the intermission, an NHL scout sitting next to me, and we talked about a little about the difficulty that the Rocket have had maintaining a lead, particularly the third period collapses, and you got one early in that period, and then got their second goal with 4 or 5 minutes left. And we looked at each other like, okay, here we go. 3-2, 4 minutes left, Utica coming. And 11 seconds after Utica got the golden move within one. Jordan Boucher, for his second of the night,
right,
made it 4-2, and that it was just different. Then there were an empty goal finished it, but that was something different. That was just something that the Rocket haven't been able to do all season. And as you said, then their demeanor post game was just like, well, there's a monkey off our back. We slayed the dragon. We won in Utica, and we prevented a third period collapse. That there were signs that it was on its way.
Absolutely. More often than not, and Sylvain Lefebvre has spoken with us about this at times this season, more often than not, a lot of times what has ended up happening has been the opposite, where the Rocket will score a goal, and then immediately after that, they'll allow a goal. And Lefebvre has spoken repeatedly about, we have to stop making mistakes right after we do good things. And in this case, it worked out the other way, where Utica got one back and immediately the Rocket responded with a goal of their own. And as you say, that really provided a lot of lift and momentum on the bench. It didn't take the wind out of their sails, and they were able to get the win. Here's what Chris Terry had to say. As you mentioned, he was back in the lineup. I asked him to kick off the interview. I asked him, you know, how it felt being back in the game. And he said, you know, it's better than being in the stands and whatnot. And I said, you know, coming off of about 3 weeks out with Andrea, I said, you know, how did your body hold up? How'd the body feel throughout the game? And he answered with a smile, with a very wry, it felt like my age. So one of the, Chris Terry is not always a player with a whole lengthy amount of things to say, but he does have a good dry sense of humor. And here's what he then said after that on getting the win in Utica.
Yeah, I thought Nibs held the fort well in the first for us. You know, we weren't bad, but we weren't good, so we were somewhere in the middle. And then, you know, a goal kind of snowballs into a lot of positives. And we had good shots. Our power play had some good looks, and penalty kill did a good job. I think that block at the end of the first there by Greggs really kind of took the momentum away from them and gave it to us. And, you know, we sat back too much in the third, but, you know, we can learn to continue to play and continue to make plays. But at the end of the day, we win, so we'll take it.
And the key in there, I think, is he said that we learn to make plays and to keep going. And that's what they did in that third period, Rick, as you just mentioned. They got scored against for Utica to come within one, and they learned to keep playing and to keep pushing, and 11 seconds later they were rewarded. So as Terry says as well, you know, it was good to get the win.
Yeah, absolutely. And then that propelled them on. You know, they had it's not always easy to then after a big win get on the bus and head north, but they were able to keep that momentum the following night in Belleville.
They were, absolutely. And we spoke with Sylvain Lefebvre about that in Utica before they headed out for Belleville. He said, you know, it's the nature of the beast. We have to travel overnight, but you know, it's the bumps and bruises don't hurt as much after a win like this, and we just have to keep doing this tomorrow night. And this is just a little bit more of what he said post game in Utica.
You know, I liked a lot of things tonight, you know, we've got to do it again tomorrow. I mean, it's a good win against a good team, and tomorrow is no different. So, you know, we got to build on some things, build on some positives, and then go from there.
And that's exactly what they did to string together back-to-back wins, which is something that I think this team really needed in the room for their confidence. Was, you know, they've gotten wins here and there, but getting back-to-back wins has been very few and far between as of late. And they head out, they have a 3-3 this weekend, which will be a bit of a grind, even more so than usual, because it's a 3-3 that's split between being home and being on the road. They play at home against Bridgeport on Friday night, bus out of Laval immediately Friday night to head to Syracuse, where they'll play in Syracuse, which is always a tough game, very physical game, on Saturday night. And then they'll bus to Rochester for an afternoon 3 o'clock game in Rochester on Sunday afternoon. So they have a tough lineup ahead of them this weekend. They're going to be tired. And so coming off of two wins on the road is going to be crucial for them to carry through into this coming weekend.
And the games for Rochester and Syracuse are pretty important because there's a bit of a dogfight there between Syracuse, Rochester, and Utica for that second spot, and they've been swapping places back and forth. So important games for those two teams, and you know you're going to get their best effort. And as you said, 3-3s are always tough. Fortunately, it hasn't happened that often this year, but going to be a tough road trip for Laval.
Absolutely. We also, you know, we mentioned that Chris Terry was back from injury. The team also had Nikita Sherbak back in the lineup momentarily as the Canadians sent him down just for roster limitation purposes before they recalled him again yesterday before the trade deadline. So he was back in the lineup so that the top line was finally reunited, right? You had Terry, Cracknell in the center, and Sherbak on the right wing. And we asked Lefebvre how big of a deal it was to have guys like Chris Terry and Nikita Sherbak back in the lineup. And you know, it's just two players, but it provides it's a big key and a big piece to the puzzle, as you'll hear Sylvain say.
Well, it's huge. I mean, obviously, he's a big part of our club. You know, he's a guy that can score not only five on five, but especially on the power play. He's a threat to shoot on the power play all the time. And obviously, having Sherbak with his playmaking ability, and you know, that gives us a lot more depth on our roster. And
so you hear that, you know, I know that we've spoken at length in the past about how, you know, fans of the NHL club always wondered what the outcome was going to be on Nikita Sherbak. Well, you just heard it from Sylvain Lefebvre. I mean, that's a pretty glowing set of compliments about the importance of having a Nikita Sherbak in your lineup coming from the head coach. For Terry as well, but particularly for Sherbak and his skill set.
So Nikita Sherbak has, I don't think anybody would dispute the fact that he was playing exceptionally well in Montreal. Because of a roster crunch and him being the only one who could be sent down without waivers, Sherbak sent to Laval had to be a bit of a blow to him, because he had been playing so well and been up on this playing with Galchenyuk and Durant. But you know, we attended practice in Utica, and Sherbak was he was flying in practice. He was all over the place. He had a jump in his step. He had a smile on his face. He was chatting and having fun with his teammates. And this is another example of the folks who read the score sheet and expect they know everything that happened. In that game against Utica, Sherbak was held off the score sheet. No goals, no assists. I don't know even if he got a shot, but he was all over the ice, and he was obviously a target because he was dangerous, and so you saw Utica spending a whole lot more time paying attention to Nikita Sherbak, and that opened up some lanes for his line mates on that particular night. So again, don't just rely on the score sheet and think you know what happened, because Sherbak was and good on him for his attitude, accepting, understanding the demotion and knowing that he'd be back soon enough, and sure enough, before the trade deadline yesterday, Sherbak was recalled to Montreal.
Well, you know, we spoke at length with Nikita after the game. In fact, you can hear the full audio of his interview on our game recap from that night. And keep an eye out on the AHL report website. We will have a full video of all of our player interviews coming out very soon, including Nikita Sherbak's interview. Some of the things that I spoke with him about, one in particular was what you just talked about, how he seemed to have a jump in his step at practice. He had a huge smile on his face all day. And I said, "You look like you're just really enjoying hockey right now." And he said, this is a quote from Nikita Sherbak. He says, "I was happy to see guys. I haven't talked to them for a couple of weeks. So it's nice to see some guys and just enjoy hockey. That's all you got. That's all you've got to do." And he said it with a big smile on his face. You can tell he is having a lot of fun with hockey right now. And of course asked him if he on this second call up had a good experience with Montreal so far. He said, "I played with good players like Drouin and Galchenyuk. It gives a boost to help me a lot. They have experience and they talk to me." And that's we've talked before. He has mentioned on several occasions that Galchenyuk is a very good mentor to him. And so it doesn't surprise me to hear him say Galchenyuk again. I'm also happy to hear that Drouin is helping him along as well, and that he's appreciating getting that experience. I also asked him, you know, do you feel that your performance in the NHL on this series of call-ups is different or better than it has been in the past? And he very confidently said yes. He said, "Just focus on what I can do and not worry about the other stuff and just to be more confident." And that's a very different Nikita Sherbak than we've seen in the past. And it's really encouraging to see his development coming in, you know, kind of hitting its stride, and he's really feeling good about his game. And so it was great to see, you know, as much as I'm sure he didn't want to be down in the AHL, it was great to see Sherbak back in the lineup. And like I said, keep your eye out. We'll have a full video of all of those interviews coming out at the AHL report soon. Rick, one of the other guys that we spoke to as well was Tom Parisi. And you had pointed this out. So it was something that we asked him in the interview as well, which I have a clip here from him as well, in that he's played with, over the course of this season, as you've always said, Tom Parisi is the best passer on the team. This is only his sophomore season, but he's paired very often with players younger than him or players who are new to the team, which you had mentioned, you know, speaks to a vote of confidence from the coaching staff. And before I get your comment on that, let's hear what Tom had to say when we mentioned that to him in his interview.
I appreciate the confidence from the coaching staff to kind of give me that extra responsibility, and being a second-year guy, I feel that I should take advantage of that and be a good role model for my partners.
So that's partners like Noah Juulsen, who he's played, well, he knew it off the top of his head. He said, "I think I played 21 games paired with Noah Juulsen this year." But he was also paired with Jacob Urabic at the beginning of the season as well. He was paired with Matt Petgrave over the weekend from Brampton. And so, Rick, you see this pattern where Tom Parisi is being put in a position that he can help guys who are new to the team, new to the league, adjust and adapt. And I think that's a really great thing for him. And it's a really keen eye by the coaching staff.
Yeah, Parisi is, as you said, a second-year player, but a little bit older than some of the others.
Mm-hmm.
I always say he's the best passer on the team. He's a good skater, and a smart player. He's just very responsible at both ends. And I think that you know, whether it's Petgrave coming in, whether it was Noah Juulsen during the playoffs last year, Brett Learnout at times, they've been paired together because Parisi, the coaching staff, knows that they can rely on him to, you know, he's a very good communicator. He's on the ice. He reads the play well. He's able to direct his defensive partner. And he's able to, he has the skating ability to make up for any errors out there as well. So I think one of those underrated players that doesn't get the credit that he deserves necessarily, but I always enjoy watching him, and it seems, as you said, the coaching staff certainly has full confidence in him as well.
Now, there are some roster updates. As far as injuries go, Jeremiah Addison is skating with the team currently. And as of yesterday, on the AHL transaction page, Jeremiah Addison was officially added to the Laval Rocket roster. So that means he is getting close to probably coming back. According to the coaches, I believe it's not going to be any earlier than mid-March, but he is skating currently with a no-contact jersey during practice. So that's good to hear. We haven't seen Addison yet this season, so it would be great if we could all get some looks at what he can do if he can make a few games here towards the end of the season. We mentioned that Chris Terry is back in the lineup. He's feeling all right. Yannick Veilla and Matt Tarmina are both still out with injury. Tarmina, according to our friends at 919 Sports who were at practice this morning, according to them, it looks like Veilla Tarmina could be back possibly in about a week. Veilla is going to be another couple of weeks. So it looks like they'll still be without those guys for a little bit longer. I believe Nikki Petty is getting close to coming back as well. But there's one other forward that no longer is on the roster, and that would be Kyle Bond, who was part of the Thomas Plekanec's trade to Toronto. So Kyle Bond, unfortunately, was packaged along with Thomas Plekanec. So he is off to Toronto, where his grandfather played. And there were a couple of guys who came back on that trade that we're going to speak about in just a few minutes, one of which is a defenseman. And because of that, Matt Petgrave was released from his PTO today. So he will likely head back to Brampton after being released from his PTO today. Willie Coren will be the seventh defenseman for the Laval Rocket. So let's talk about the two new roster assignments that have now joined the Laval Rocket. Well, of course, according to Marc Bergevin, they might be getting a look in Montreal here before the season's over. But that is Kirby Reichel and Renat Valiev, both from the Toronto Marlies. Valiev will be wearing number 3 on the defensive core, and Kirby Reichel will be wearing number 18. And Rick, I'd like to get your thoughts on these two. The package was Thomas Plekanec and Kyle Bond, and in return, Montreal got a number 2, a second round pick, and Valiev and Reichel. Now, it's my understanding from what I saw today that Valiev had indeed asked Toronto to be traded, and so he was looking for a new opportunity. So could mean he'll have some good energy if he's happy about the trade, but your thoughts in general on Valiev and Reichel and their upside and what they could bring.
As far as Kirby Reichel, he was a player that came with a lot of promise, being a first round pick. And this is his third team, I believe now, in a short time, and has never ever lived up to the promise, and likely won't. He'll get that courtesy look, and I'm sure he'll bring lots of energy and power forward-ish kind of energy. But he's, skating's an issue with him, and work ethic's a bit of an issue, and so I think, that's he'll play on the Rocket for the remainder of the season, I expect, unless a lot of this is about GMs trying to make themselves look good, and keeping their newly acquired players in the lineup. Which is, if Ryko and Valiev both get called up, and they've already used one of their call-ups, remember. That leaves only one for the rest. So all of the good soldiers, the Chris Terrys, the Adam Cracknells, the Jeremy Gregoires, the Brett Learnouts, Matt Terramina, when he comes back, just one call-up for those guys who have worked and devoted to the Laval Rocket. I find that a shame, but that's a completely different question than what you asked.
And it's one that we might get to in our top five. So we...
As far as Valiev, I think there's a little bit more promise there. He was stuck behind, there's a lot of talent in Toronto and on the Marlies. Good size, as far as size, he's in the range of a Brett Learnow, skates well, and just a bit of a project, I think, but, are you any further ahead with him than you would have been with Jarabek? Jarabek had a lot of experience playing at a high level in Europe. So, there's some promise there, he's probably going to get a chance to play at the NHL level. And given that the Canadians still have, a bargain basement group of defenders there, maybe he can stick for the rest of the season, the 20 games that are left. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, according to Anthony and Raphael at 91.9, practice today saw Reichel on the top line replacing Nikita Sherbeck's position. So Terry Cracknell, Reichel on the top line. I don't even know if I want to get into my commentary on that, but okay, let's see how he does up there. For defensive pairings, they and this is in no particular order, so I don't know who had top pairing, but the pairings were in no particular order. LeBlanc and Bork were still together. Parisi was paired with Zhelina, and Valiev was paired with Learnout. I like the Valiev Learnout together. Those are two very strong defenders together.
Two big guys.
That's going to be a that's quite a defensive pair back there on the blue line. So
we remember Didier Learnout, the Twin Towers back there.
Yes, absolutely. So I'll be interested to see, there's the Rocket don't play until Friday. So there's still a few days of practice that are going to come along. And so I'll be interested to see if Sylvain Lefebvre sticks with those pairings and those line combinations all week, or if he shuffles the two new guys around a little bit just to see how they fit with different guys. But on first look, that's where guys were positioned today. So we'll keep an eye on it. We'll see what happens. Certainly interesting. And like I said, the Laval Rocket play at home against Bridgeport on Friday night. And then Rick and I at the AHL Report team will be on the road yet again this weekend, covering both of the Rockets' road games in Syracuse on Saturday night and then in Rochester on Sunday, both of which should be very good games. The Amerks have certainly surged here in the second portion of the season. They are currently sitting in third place in the North Division, and the Crunch are in second place, and they are only 3 points apart from each other. And neither has a game in hand on the other. So those are going to be very, very, very entertaining games, I think. So be sure to follow along at the AHL Report on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and on our website, and we'll have all of the latest updates for you there. All right, well, let's shift gears, shall we, over to the AHL. And the first bit of housekeeping, I guess you could say, that we'll get out of the way is, of course, the CCM AHL Player of the Week. And that is Ben Sexton from the Belleville Senators, someone who our colleague Joseph Whalen at the AHL Report is very familiar with. He had 3 goals and 4 assists in 3 games last week, and and some of that was against Levi. Don't I say this every week, that every week it seems like the player of the week has scored goals against Laval, and it happened again.
Three assists on Saturday. Well, Nick Paul had the three goals, and Sexton had the three assists. Against the Rocket,
That's something that we didn't mention in the Rockets game against Belleville. They allowed a hat trick, a natural hat trick in the second period by Nick Paul, but still came out victorious at the end of the day. So good for them. But Ben Sexton had all three assists. It was the Nick Paul Ben Sexton show for sure. So good for him. This is his fourth professional year. And he's doing very well with Belleville. And so congratulations to him on being named the CCM AHL Player of the Week. And so now I guess, Rick, let's just take a quick look at how that playoff picture is shaping up. We'll start with the division that the Laval Rocket is in, the North Division. The Marlies are sitting solidly in first place in the division with 79 points, and the Crunch and the Americans and the Comets are filling in those other three spots that are currently in a playoff position. Laval is in fifth place, 18 points behind Utica. So it's a bit of a gap there. Tight race over in the Atlantic Division, though. The Lehigh Valley Phantoms have a good foothold on the first position at 77 points. And then the Penguins and the Providence Bruins are tied at 69 points for that second and third place. And the Charlotte Checkers have moved into fourth place. Surprisingly enough, this is usually a Hershey Bears show, and the Hershey Bears are buried down in seventh place with only 54 points. So Rick, I think it's going to be interesting here heading down the stretch to see Bridgeport, who Laval plays on Friday night, is in fifth place behind the Checkers, but only 7 points out. So I think that's still, you know, if Bridgeport goes on a tear, things could get interesting in the Atlantic Division there.
Yep. The top six teams in that division are still in it, both Hartford and Bridgeport. There's a bit of a gap, as you said. But it could get interesting, and we've seen teams get hot. Like Utica, like Rochester in the north. So if either one of those teams does that, Bridgeport probably has the leg up there. They've got a couple of games in hand, but you got to like the Checkers too, moving their way up.
Absolutely.
And now occupying the fourth place spot.
Speaking of Josiah Didier, who is still playing for them, we just mentioned him. Over in the Central Division, it shouldn't be a surprise that the Manitoba Moose are still occupying first place, huh?
They are, and they've had their struggles over the last 10 games, but they still have an 8 or 9 point gap on the pack that is following behind them. They seem comfortable where they are now, and with a bit of a dogfight behind them.
Well, and the Grand Rapids Griffins and Chicago Wolves have both had pretty good success in their last 10 games. They seem to have a good foothold on second and third place there. And over in the Pacific Division, looking at the Tucson Roadrunners currently in first place there, followed by the San Diego Gulls, the Texas Stars, and Stockton Heat. And so that's, you know, the Ontario Reign kind of close behind. They're only a point away from the Gulls and the Heat with 56 points. The Rampage, it's everything's kind of really close together there in the Pacific Division. So it'll be interesting to see down the stretch how all of that shakes out.
Yeah, I think the Barracuda and the Condors are the only two that are kind of
out of it.
I wouldn't say out of it, but
yeah.
The other top six teams, there could be a lot of change top to bottom. They could all change. And what always gets me with the Pacific is how one team will play so many more games than the other. So it's always hard to, they have so many more games in hand. So it's
right.
Always hard to adjust their scheduling. They play fewer games overall, of course, we know that, but their scheduling is quite unbalanced, so it's hard to predict you know, who's going to end up where.
Yeah, you've got two teams, the Stars and the Rampage, have both played 55 games already, and then you've got the San Diego Gulls, who've played 48. So it's a little hard to judge, but things are starting to take shape. Like I said, it's still a little early. You know, we have a good 6 or 7 weeks left to go in the season, in the regular season, but now's the time when teams are really going to start to hunker down and really make their push. And as these positions start to get solidified. So we'll be sure to keep a close eye on all of this and keep you updated to see how things are going to start shaping up for the run to the Calder Cup. We do now have Where Are They Now. Before I hand the Where Are They Now reins over to Rick, because he's the one, as we know, who takes us on epic journeys on Where Are They Now. But I do have one quick Where Are They Now bit of news that happened this week from a guy that St. John's Ice Caps fans will be familiar with, really great guy that we had the pleasure to work with while he was with St. John's, and that's Brandon McNally. Should be a familiar name to Ice Caps fans. He was playing in the ECHL for the Cincinnati Cyclones, and he actually just signed a PTO with the Chicago Wolves, who, as we said, is in third place over there in the Central, and they're pushing towards the playoffs again. So really happy for Brandon McNally to get a look in the AHL this year and with a team that looks like it's heading for the postseason.
Very nice guy. Yeah, no, he's a wonderful guy. I'm happy for him. Congratulations to Brandon.
Very, very much. So with that, I will cede the floor to the master storyteller and wait with anticipation to see where someone is now. Rick, just tell us, where are they now?
Well, this you mentioned earlier on Sunday, I guess it was, we heard about the trade of Thomas Pekanec going to the Toronto, along with Kyle Bond, going to the Toronto Maple Leafs. And then last night, Pekanec was in his first game with the Leafs, and it was, I think everybody said, it was just very odd. It's very odd to see him wearing the Leafs sweater. It was odd to see him without his goatee. It was just odd, uncomfortable, as it was, as he's been with the Canadiens for 13 years or thereabouts. But it's also odd because trades between rivals and long-standing historic and sometimes bitter rivals just don't happen all that often.
Yeah.
And in fact, the last time that the Canadiens and Leafs were engaged in the trade was almost 10 years ago.
Wow.
Yes, back in 2008. But the story doesn't start in 2008.
Oh boy, here we go.
Story starts in 2004, the Canadiens' 2004 NHL entry draft. And it was in the 2004 draft, the Canadiens' first round, the first round pick overall in that draft was Kyle Chipchura. Kind of an odd choice, more of a defensive kind of player. Their third round pick was Alexi Emelin, who took a little while to get over when he was finally brought to the Canadiens, but he was the third round pick that year. The ninth round pick, there isn't even nine rounds of the draft anymore, 262 overall, was Mark Streit.
Okay.
But I'm not, you know me well enough that I'm not going to spend Where Are They Now talking about Mark Streit.
No.
But it was in the fifth round, 150th overall, that the Canadiens took a Belarusian by the name of Mikhail Grabowski.
Alrighty then.
Grabowski was I wouldn't say he's diminutive. He's about 5'11", but he was an offensively skilled center, pretty good skater, great hands. Didn't have any of a physical, much of a physical game, but he was a Belarusian, born in Germany, just lots of offensive spark.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the 2006-07 season that came to North America, 66 games with the Hamilton Bulldogs, scored 17 goals, 37 assists for 54 points.
Alrighty.
Had a brief call-up, three games with the Habs, but that was the 2007 was the Calder Cup winning team. That the last time that the Canadiens AHL affiliate won the Calder Cup, and that was the team that had Carey Price, Jan Denis, who we talked about just a week or two ago retiring. It had Max Lapierre, Maxim Lapierre, who we just saw at the Olympics playing for Team Canada.
Mm-hmm.
It had the Kostitsyn brothers, Andre Kostitsyn and Sergei Kostitsyn, also Belarusian.
Love the Kostitsyn brothers.
And the aforementioned Mikhail Grabowski. So the next season was split between Hamilton and Montreal for Grabowski. And in March of that season, 2008, it was a road trip, the dreaded Western road trip. And the Canadians were in Phoenix, the Phoenix Coyotes, as they were called then.
Right.
And Mikhail Grabowski was healthy scratched by head coach Guy Carboneau in favor of Matthew Dandineau.
Oh.
It was still going on then. And Grabowski didn't like it that much.
Oh, really?
He was feeling kind of underappreciated. He didn't feel that that they fully understood his talents. So he left the team, and he flew to Los Angeles, and he met with his agent. Didn't go over well with fans. It didn't go over well with management, obviously.
Oh, I'm sure.
And in the summer of 2008, Mikhail Grabowski was traded to the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Hmm.
Now that trade was July 3rd. It was free agent during the free agent frenzy period. Grabowski was traded to Toronto for Greg Patterson.
Okay.
Who would become, and then traded to Dallas for Dirty Ben. Was traded for Greg Patterson and a second round pick. Later that second round pick, the Toronto pick, was traded in the fall. It was traded to Chicago for Robert Lang. They needed a scorer. Robert Lang was the guy. But there was a trade with the dreaded rival Toronto Maple Leafs, and you have a disgruntled player in Grabowski who lands in Toronto with a huge chip on his shoulder.
Of course.
Because he thought he was mistreated by Guy Carboneau and everyone else. Now, Grabowski, you should understand, just from a mental makeup, he was always the kind of guy that had his chin strap fastened a little bit too tight, you know? And while he was on the Bulldogs, he had a running feud with fellow Belarusians, the Kostitsyn brothers.
Hmm. That's not good.
So after the trade, that fall, first game after the trade, you have the emotionally charged rivalry of a Canadiens Leafs game. Plus, you add this stick of dynamite in Grabowski. And so what he does is Carey Price.
Oh, right.
To be technical, Bud ends him in the family jewels.
Nice.
So Sergei Kostitsyn, who there was already no love lost.
No.
Just ran him over. Just absolutely demolished him. Got a penalty for charging and a 10-minute misconduct because it was particularly flagrant.
Well, yeah.
So the next time they meet in January, there was an on-ice scuffle that happened between Grabowski and Sergei Kostitsyn. And whatever was said, whatever was done, whatever the scrum was all about, Grabowski became so incensed that he shoved a linesman trying to get at Kostitsyn and earned himself a 3-game suspension.
Oh, well, you can't do that.
So after the game, after that incident, Grabowski called out Kostitsyn and said, listen, I'm questioning his heritage. I don't think he's a Belarusian because I like all Belarusians and I get along and I don't fight Belarusians. I think he's French. and so that didn't go over well with the Canadians or their fan base or anybody. So, and he said, listen, if he wants to fight, I'm going to go into the street and I'll be there every minute of every day and I will wait for him and we'll settle this.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
Alrighty.
So they asked Sergei about it and he said, well, he didn't like him and didn't, there was this long feud because Grabowski was talking trash about him and his brother in the Russian newspapers.
Right.
So, fast forward to the following year. It's an Olympic year, the 2010 Winter Olympics in Vancouver. And Belarus selects the Kostitsyn brothers and Grabowski to represent the team. And it wasn't going good, I guess, in the practices and whatnot. So the coach finally had to sit the three of them down and say, okay, listen,
man.
For do whatever you want, but for the Olympics, we're calling a truce to this or you're all off the team.
Right.
So Grabowski had all this, because he was forced to play nice with the Kostitsyns, had all this pent up energy and hate and emotion and everything else. So between games, while he was on the streets of Vancouver, he saw a fan wearing a Montreal Canadiens jersey.
Okay.
And he just went over and sucker punched the guy. Knocked him out cold. Knocked him out cold on the street. And then if that wasn't enough, he punched the guy's wife in the face.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So he got himself arrested during the Vancouver Olympics.
Lovely.
Uh-huh. Interestingly, as if that all wasn't interesting enough as it was, there's also, just to tie you in here a little bit, there is also a Philadelphia connection.
Oh, great.
Because Grabowski came to Philadelphia, I think it was around 2011-12, and he apologized to the city of Philadelphia for being the player who prematurely ended the career of Chris Pronger.
Well, yeah, we're still a little bitter about that.
Well, it was the stick of Grabowski. He was falling through in a shot, and accidental. He caught Pronger in the eye, and that was it.
That did it. Yep.
But with the Leafs, he was valued. He was producing. He was a bit of a time bomb. But in 2012, he signed a 5-year, $27.5 million contract extension. Which $5.5 million a year in 2012. That's one of the more generous contracts at the time.
A little bit.
And we now find ourselves still with the rivalry, still with the Canadiens-Toronto rivalry, and Grabowski still with the Leafs on the 9th of February, 2013. And there's a scrum, and Grabowski's involved, and Max Pacioretty goes over. Everybody pairs off. There's a scrum along the boards. Max Pacioretty puts his arm around Grabowski's neck. And Grabowski bit Max Pacioretty's hand.
I do remember that.
And the league, there was no suspension in the league. For some reason, they said they didn't have enough video to suspend him. They it wasn't clear whether he bit. The league said there wasn't evidence that Grabowski bit Pacioretty, other than the fact that there was bite marks on Pacioretty's hand, and the fact that he went for a tetanus shot because he broke the skin was broken.
Skin.
And the fact that if someone had just bothered to ask Grabowski, as reporters did you bite him? And he said, yeah.
He said, yeah, bit him.
Pacioretty put his hand where it didn't belong. I had nothing left to do but bite him. Yeah, I did. So later on that summer, the Leafs bought out his contract and sent him on his way. He played for the Capitals for one season, then 3 years, although one was injury related, with the New York Islanders. And then, so the last game that he actually played was March 15th, 2016. And since then, he's had concussion symptoms.
Hmm.
However, his name resurfaced during the expansion draft. Because at the time, the New York Islanders had a number of players that they did not want to expose to the Vegas Golden Knights.
Right.
So, Garcinot sent their first-round pick, 15th overall, a good pick, to Vegas. And they sent Mikhail Grabowski and his $5 million salary to help bump up so Vegas met the salary floor. And in that way, the New York Islanders dictated which player that Vegas would select off their roster, and it just turned out it was Jeff Berube, the goaltender.
Oh, right.
And so Vegas has on their books this year $5 million for Grabowski, and Grabowski was making all kinds of noise back in the fall that he was going to, you know, make a comeback and wanted to be in Vegas's lineup. But he failed the medical, and so he and David Clarkson are on LTIR on the Vegas for Vegas, propping up their cap, then Grabowski will come off the Vegas books this summer, and perhaps that will be the end of the story. But I thought it made for an interesting, going all the way back to 2004 and the journey all the way to the present. With a number of little stops in between, thought that it made for an interesting, where are they now?
always entertaining. And as I say, good storytelling. And intersects lots of paths and teams and players we know and things like that. So thank you for, you folks have, I can't imagine how much research Where Are They Now takes Mr. Rick Stevens to do every week. And we certainly appreciate his efforts. And it's really an interesting segment every week. And if you have, you know, if there's someone that you think of that you think, you know, what's that person doing now? Drop us a line, give us some ideas. If you're a regular listener, you know that we love to take listener suggestions for Where Are They Now. So send us an email or tweet us or leave us a message on Facebook with your suggestions or ideas for anyone who you would like to know the answer to the question of Where Are They Now. Thanks, Rick. That was really good. It was a really good segment.
You're very welcome.
Well, that brings us, of course, to our top five, which I mentioned is not necessarily a top five in the traditional sense of the word. It's revolving around the trade deadline, and just kind of let's explore just our top five thoughts about the trade deadline. And I, you know, lots of people have lots of opinions on trade deadline day and the trades that happened, the trades that didn't happen, all sorts of things. And so, our listeners always kind of like to get our take on things on Twitter and whatnot. So I thought we'd explore a little bit of that. But I imagine that you have, disclaimers and rules and regulations. Are there any such things, or are we going just diving right in this week?
Well, given that it isn't an official top five, it's just a collection of thoughts. Then I won't. Maybe along the way, I'll think of a disclaimer or an exclusion or a restriction. But right now, let's just wade in and see what happens.
This might be a first. We might be witnessing history as it's occurring. We should mark this date down in the volumes of time, February 27th, 2018. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's start with number who, which one of us should go first?
Go ahead.
Well, being a member of the media and being a former television producer and television personality and someone who has done live television, for quite a number of years in her career as well. My first thought on trade deadline day has to do with Trade Center and Sportsnet's all-day coverage, which by, 11 o'clock yesterday morning, it was literally saying, I don't know how Duffy does this every year. Back when trades were happening like crazy all day, there wasn't much for producers to have to program because it was just going to be the analysts and the commentators and the insiders just breaking news as it happened and talking about trades and getting those guys on the phone to do phone interviews and whatnot. But over the last few years, with so many things, with so many more teams, starting to do their restructuring more at the draft and in the summer, and then B, starting to do some trades in advance of the official trade deadline day. We've seen, much to James Duffy's chagrin, and Mackenzie was ribbing him quite well on Sunday when the Plekanec trade happened and things started going down on Sunday. James Duffy and the TSN crew and the guys over at Sportsnet and whatnot, they find themselves on the air live for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours on an end with not a whole lot to talk about. In fact, last year, the first trade didn't happen until I think 12:45 or something like that. This year it happened somewhere around 10:30 or something like that. But I know there's not a different way to necessarily do the format because you want those guys there when trades actually break and you never know if it's going to be a slow year or a heavy year, but my goodness, you know, having to fill it with a lot of prepackaged, pre-produced skits and comedic segments, and oh, it was a bit torturous, I have to say. And again, I don't know how they do it sitting on those sets all day and trying to come up with new material as the minutes tick by and the hours tick by, and then a flurry of things happen in the last hour. But I have to say, just in general, you know, I'm sure every year the producers try to brainstorm ways to, with the talent of ways to make that not as droll as it has been, given that GMs aren't being very cooperative with handing down a lot of trades on deadline day. But for me, it's just, that's part of the exhausting part of it, is just having to get through a day of just waiting.
It used to, a few years ago, come on at noon, and, you know, then they'd say, oh, but, you know, then we have to recap the trade. So let's start at 8 a.m. And, but as you said, with when trades aren't happening, then they're left to fill. Some of it's interesting. Some of it's just the Peter Mansbridge segment, CBC News. It took me a minute even to figure out who it was, bearded Peter Mansbridge, but it gets silly at times. And fueled by Harvey's Burgers, I guess. but yes, let's give them credit for making it through, and then I think even more so is once the trades start to come in fast and furious, to not only, you know, try and unwrap it and sort it and get it on the air, but make sure that it's right. And they do a pretty good job of that indeed.
Yes, they do. So that's where I'm starting at with my kind of number five.
All right. I haven't, as I said, numbered these or they're just more random thoughts than anything else.
Sure.
And they're more about the trades themselves. I guess, you know, that there was some big deals, and there was some big deals that didn't happen. I guess the biggest deal that didn't happen was Erik Karlsson, and many were expecting that because of his semi-public feud with the general manager, that it might happen. And he had been looked like he had been courted by the folks in Tampa Bay during the All-Star break. And then we heard as the day went on that Vegas was very much involved in trying to bring Karlsson there, but just proved to be a trade too big to do on a deadline day. Max Pacioretty didn't get moved, and that I think was more in terms of Mark Bergevin didn't, his ask wasn't matching what people had available. Mark Bergevin insisted that a younger version of Max Pacioretty, who played center, was coming back. So a young, dynamic scoring center would be part of the package, and teams just aren't going to give that up on when they're on their way to the playoffs. So. That didn't happen, but what did happen was the Ryan McDonagh trade, and Steve Yzerman does it again. Bought both McDonagh and JT Miller. Nemistikov was the only deletion off his lineup. Now he gave up some good picks, some good prospects. I like Brett Howden. but managed. And so both teams, I think the Rangers did fine they did pretty well in the trade as well. But the bonus for Yzerman is that he didn't have to lose much off of his roster to get it done, and gets both Miller and McDonough. So that was a huge move during the day. That's kind of the marquee trades, the ones that happened and didn't happen, and my thoughts on them.
Great. My next item, I do get to some trade specific things here a little further down my list, but my next point is more subjective again, and that is, you know, speaking of Max Pacioretty, his commentary to reporters last night after the game, he hadn't spoken to the media for the last couple of days because his interactions with the media in the days leading up to the trade deadline were getting a little terse. And so he had a very emotional response last night after the deadline had passed, after he wasn't traded. And the thing that had struck a big chord with me was his point that he made about appreciating the people who, leading up to the trade deadline, had treated him like a human being. And I have a really that, you know, I had tweeted something else about this topic similarly a few days before that, when I think there were some Montreal media who were pressing Thomas Plekanec on how he would feel if he gets traded. And I just, not just in Montreal, but in general, I just wish that the media deluge on players before the trade deadline would stop. It's one thing if you want to ask the coach questions, if you want to ask the GM questions, have at it. But understand, and I used this phrase in a tweet that I put out this morning. Understand that these players are not robots who are programmed for your entertainment. They are, as Max Pacioretty said, human beings. They have feelings. They have families. They go through ups and downs. And I can't for the life of me imagine what it must be like, especially if you are on a team that is going to be sellers at the trade deadline. I can't imagine the stress that places on players of not having control of your own fate and not knowing what city you're going to wake up in the next day. And I just, you know, I understand journalists need to do their job and they want to get, you know, those good sound bites and those good quotes from players about, you know, well, what do you think about the rumors that you're going to get traded? Or how would you feel if you got traded? Or, you know, if you get traded to XYZ team, how will you feel? Well, let's leave the hypotheticals with the players for after the trade actually happens, if it actually happens. As I said, ask the GM all you want. Ask the coach all you want, because it's not something that they personally are in inner turmoil over, but leave the player out of it until there's actual official news to report on or not. All of the drama with Pacioretty leading up to the trade deadline turned out to be for nothing because he didn't get traded. So what's the need to make his time even more miserable by people holding him down with their thumbs? Plekanec is the same thing. Now, Plekanec did get traded, but you could wait until after the trade happens and then get his reaction on it. And then he'll, you know, I just, in general, when it comes to trade deadline, I sincerely wish that the media would take a bit more empathetic, sympathetic, and compassionate approach when they're speaking to players before anything has actually happened. Little bit of a soapbox rant, but that's just, and hey, that's just my opinion. And as a member of the credentialed press, who is a journalist who interviews players, that is my approach. I would never do that myself. other journalists are going to. That's their prerogative. That's their style. It could be what their news editors are asking for. I'm not holding any one person accountable there. I'm just saying in general, it's a culture that I wish would change a little bit.
And I think the narrative that got out ahead of the trade deadline with respect to Pacioretty was not only that Bergevin was, you know, open to receiving offers, was that Pacioretty himself wanted out. And he got a ton of criticism for that. And, you know, it was Nick Kypreos that said, Pacioretty wants out. And on the French side, Ron Fournier, who jumped in and, oh yeah, well, I can tell you he wants out. Now, Pacioretty was asked directly last night, and he said, I never asked to be traded, never. And given his brutally honest emotional comments post-game last night after the game with Philadelphia, there's no reason to believe that he wasn't being very honest. There's plenty of reasons to believe that the folks that were putting the narrative out that he wanted out, you know, were manipulating the, you know, either something that was said misconstrued, whether it was talking to a teammate, whether it was just speculation, like, oh, gee, it must be really tough for the position he's in. He must want out. And then attributing that to Pacioretty, he never said it.
Yeah.
And, you know, as Pacioretty said, and as you said, they are human. They have families. And Pacioretty said, you know, his son, Max Jr., wanted to wear his Habs jersey, knew it was an important day, wanted to wear his Habs jersey to school. And Max said, you know, it's a little thing, but I wanted to make sure that when I went to pick him up, which, you know, at the end of the trade deadline, I was that it was still the right jersey. You know,
yeah.
I wanted my son still to be wearing the jersey of the team that I belong to, rather than he didn't want to be traded. He wanted to stay in Montreal. He said, Montreal is my home. And I think that's what, you know, oh, Pacioretty's an American. Oh, Plekanec is from the Czech Republic. Oh, Andre Markov's a Russian. And every single one of them, Pacioretty yesterday said, Montreal's my home. Thomas Plekanec said, I've been here for 15 years of my life. Montreal is my home. Andre Markov said, I'm from Russia, but Montreal, my home is in Montreal. They have a strong bond to the city, to the team, to their teammates. And for people, fans and media to be so callous and disrespectful is not what being a fan is about, is not what journalism is about. It's the viciousness and the callousness has gone way overboard, and it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong.
Yep, I agree. That's why it was my number four.
Yeah, I'm not going by numbers here. We're just going through thoughts. So I'll just throw out that that I think one of the things that was rather surprising about the trade deadline was the prices. We heard from most of the GMs at the end of the day, and almost all of them, without exception, except Marc Bergevin, said that it was definitely a seller's market. I think it was Bob Murray from Anaheim said that players who were normally getting second round picks were getting in the past were getting first round picks, and we saw, you know, 18 draft picks traded on the day. Five were first rounders, which is a little unusual. We had Ryan Hartman going to the Predators for a first round pick, which me, I had Ryan Hartman in fantasy hockey for a bit, but first round pick is something else. Thomas Tatar, kind of a second, third line player, 3 years left on his contract, got a first, second, and third round pick. It was, the prices were high. Prices were very high, and definitely a seller's market, which was, you know, it's something you don't know when you're going into the trade deadline, but yeah, teams were willing to pay a high price to get what they wanted.
Well, that kind of leads right into my next thought here. You say it was definitively a seller's market, and a big thing that stood out for me yesterday, and yes, it's partially because it's part of the organization that we cover, is the fact that it was a supreme seller's market yesterday, and man, was there a lot for Marc Bergevin to sell yesterday, and he didn't. And it's a continuing pattern with this GM that really starts to get to me when we're talking about the prospects and the guys that we cover at the AHL level, and even for the young players who are currently playing up with the NHL team as well. You know, Marc Bergevin has cap space galore, has had it all season to play around with. He's got a ton of, no offense to these guys, but he's got a ton of dead weight on the NHL roster, the Schlemkos and the Jordy Bens. And I mean, he did at least get rid of Joe Morrow. And you know, I mean, you've got guys up there like Byron Fraze, who you named a captain in Laval and 5 days later called him up never to be seen in Laval ever again. You know, and then Bergevin comes out of the gates in his post-trade deadline presser yesterday and talks about how, oh, well, I have a new plan. And the new plan is that we're going to get younger and we're going to get faster. Well, all of that put together doesn't make any sense to me. And it's frustrating for me. It has to be frustrating for the guys in the system. You alluded to this a little bit earlier when we were doing the Rocket recap, Rick, that where, you know, now, okay, so fine. You want to trade Thomas Plekanec? Trade Thomas Plekanec for that second round pick and be done. But you traded Kyle Bond as well and got two guys in return. Okay. Maybe Valiev will see some time in the NHL. But you've got Kirby Reichel, who's now parked, at least today, on the first line. Bergevin says in his presser yesterday that there's a possibility or a good chance that both of them could see minutes in Montreal in the coming weeks. And as Rick, you said earlier in this program, that's going to burn two of Montreal's post-trade deadline call-ups. They only get four. And so what is the message that you're sending to your young prospects? What is the message that you're sending, as you said, to those soldiers in the AHL, the Adam Cracknells, who are putting up enormous points this season, Chris Terry, who's putting up enormous points and is a league leader again this season, your Brett Lernouts, your Mike McCarrans, who are still buried on the second line, you know, in that shutdown role, you know, possibly Jeremy Gregoire, but the list goes on of guys that you've got in your system, and even the guys who are up in Montreal. Nikita Sherbak's up there now. De La Rose is still up there. You know, what does that say to the youth in your organization when Bergevin says we want to get younger and faster? Well, if I were any of them, I'd be looking around going, well, how much younger do you need us to get? We're already here. And so this, for me, this was kind of the penultimate thing for yesterday, is that Bergevin was practically silent on trade deadline day, on a day when it was a seller's market, on a day that he should have been getting rid of all of these guys that aren't critical to the core of the organization to make room for the youth that they've been developing in the AHL, give them room to call them up and give them some NHL minutes and send the message that, yes, we value you. Yes, we've made an investment in you and you've made an investment in us and we see you. It's very frustrating. I certainly don't understand the philosophy behind it. I had hopes for better. I really thought Bergevin was going to get rid of a lot more. Not take guys back, just get picks, stockpile on picks, get a ton of guys at the draft. But give your youth that you currently have and you've invested time and effort into a shot. But apparently I don't know. Apparently that's just common sense and I don't know. But that stood out very much to me.
Yeah, his comments, he had a new plan that the Canadians now would get younger and faster with character. He had to come up with something because, you know, he arrived in Montreal with a 5-year plan. It's been more than 5 years. That plan has been a dismal failure. His number one priority to get a first line center, he still hasn't achieved. But as you said, the younger, faster business, if that rather than saying that's your plan, show us your actions. And in that case, you had assets to unload. Jordy Benn was one. David Schlemko, I don't understand. He's got 2 more years on his deal for and a total of $4 million. Why wasn't David Schlemko gone? The only I know the response is
go ahead.
The response is going to be that there wasn't a market or there was nobody interested. Well, the Capitals got Kempney. And if there's a market for Kempney, there's a market for Schlemko, or there's a market for Ben. It's just that Bergevin, number one, overvalues them. Number two, would prefer to see them in the lineup than, Brett Lernau or whoever it might be brought up. The Canadians have done, as I've argued many times and even as recent as last week, they create a roadblock at the NHL level for their prospects so that transition to the NHL, that's always an issue. By not clearing, as you called it, the deadwood, whether it's Ben, whether it's Schlemko, whether it's Fraze, whether it's Alzner, whether it's Logan Shaw, whether it's Andrew Shaw with the big, lengthy contract, whether it's Antti Niemi, why did you rehabilitate Antti Niemi only to lose him for nothing at the end of the season if you weren't going to trade him at the trade deadline? That's insane. Yeah. Not only that, then you go out and you get a Mike Riley who's going to, from Minnesota, who's going to slot in and maybe in the lineup tomorrow. Again, taking a place of Riley's faster. I'll give him that, but taking the place of one of your own prospects. It's a poor way to develop players. It's a poor way to incentivize and motivate your players. And it's the reason amongst many other reasons, it's the reason that the Canadians find themselves at the bottom of the standings.
I do have the reason why David Schlemko wasn't traded, though.
All right.
He was desperately needed in the shootout last night.
And I got all your clips, your YouTube clips. Look at him against Calgary in his one. Yeah, great. That's nice. Wouldn't it be better to put Pacioretty, particularly because of the day he had yesterday? Wouldn't it be better to put Pacioretty in there? Wouldn't it be better to put Brendan Gallagher in there? Wouldn't it be better to put, speaking of prospects that, that deserve other opportunities, Jakob De La Rose, who had a terrific game yesterday.
Really
put
nice
him in the shootout. How about Victor Mehta? Do you think he could have handled the shootout better than Schlemko? Absolutely.
Probably.
He could have.
All right. Well, I have allowed us to digress there a bit. More just being the point, you know, and I'm sure, you know, I don't know what's on the agenda for Habs 360 this week, but I'm sure the trade deadline will be discussed. And I encourage all of our listeners to tune into Habs 360 for full breakdown of everything going on with the Montreal Canadiens, with Rick and Chris G. But as far as just general thoughts on the trade deadline yesterday, to me, Montreal was a giant disappointment, surprisingly so. I really expected a lot more to be done, and it just concerns me for the prospects in the system. So that takes us to your next thought.
I probably just gave it, I think maybe my last point will just be to kind of highlight some of the who I saw were winners on the day, and keeping in mind that the day includes more than the day in the period leading up. You know, I give credit to the Devils for quietly bringing in Michael Grabner from the Rangers. That's a way to boost your offense. I give credit to Jim Rutherford and the Penguins for getting very creative, using Vegas's cap space to acquire Derek Brassard. I'm not going to give the Bruins any credit whatsoever, although Nashua helped them. But out of the Bruins situation,
Rangers
made
out on that.
The positive there is Ryan Lindgren.
Yeah.
Brother of Charlie gets out from the Bruins system and is now property of the New York Rangers. So we like that.
That is fine.
The Jets, you know, the usually conservative Jets, Kevin Sheveldayoff, and they gave up a lot. I like Eric Foley and some big picks, and they get Paul Stastny and. And the Blues, you know, you look at the interviews afterwards, the Blues players were all despondent. The Jets players were pumped that they had somebody who can come in and solidify their third line and was a signal, I think more importantly, a signal that we're in, we're with you, we're doing everything we can. And now the Jets, who already had a tremendous roster, I think have to be considered one of the playoffs to go deep the only other I think winner just for your sake I'll mention Johnny Oduya because I think we mentioned Johnny in our the best names a week or so ago. There he goes to he gets picked up on waivers and now a member of the Philadelphia Flyers.
And I'm fine with that. You know, I'll actually tack on to that as well. It happened because of emergency reasons, because Philly and goaltenders is like oil and water. But they had to get Peter Mrazek well before the deadline, and that's already working out well, as they could see last night against the Canadiens. So he was fantastic last night, looked stellar, looked comfortable. I'm more than happy to have him in the mix. I thought the Flyers did very well. Good on Detroit for getting three picks for Thomas Tatar. I mean, who knew that was going to happen?
Wow.
It's just incredible. I'm just going to wrap up with just another general thought then as well. That kind of goes off the Bergevin thing in an opposite fashion. I really liked Paul Maurice's presser yesterday with Winnipeg after the trade deadline. You know, I wish his while he was dry and sarcastic of, you know, oh, who will Stastny play with? Well, he'll play for the Jets, you know. you know, things like that. But when asked actual questions about how guys fit into different places on the roster and how the plan is going to be moving forward. He didn't give canned coach responses. He gave good hockey answers and really explained in depth the pros and cons and strengths and weaknesses of players that he was talking about and why they fit with certain other line mates or defensive pairings, and just gave really intelligent inside looks at the mind of a coach and how they structure their roster and their lines and their lineups for the night. And kind of going along with that was the letter to the fans that the Rangers had put out a couple of weeks ago that went in depth in discussing, here's our plan moving forward. We don't want you to think that we're not listening to you. But hockey is a business. And so here's what we've got in mind. And they go into great depth. You know, I'm really encouraged by organizations and coaches and GMs who really make an effort to not just spit out the same old tired answers when they're asked questions by the press, but to actually help educate their fans, help to make fans and the media understand why things are working the way they're working or why decisions are made the way that they are. You know, I think sometimes the media and the fans get a bit entitled, thinking that they're entitled to know, to just keep continually ask, well, why, but why, but why? And teams don't have to give up every answer to the question why, but I appreciate the ones that give intelligent responses. And I saw a lot of that at this trade deadline. Some I did not, but I think that's a nice trend to see of in official capacities in press conferences that really have intelligent conversations going on. And I just appreciated that.
I agree.
So we would love to, of course, hear your thoughts on trade deadline day. What did you like? What did you not like? It doesn't have to be, related to the Montreal Canadiens or the Laval Rocket or anything like that. It could be league-wide, just in general. What do you like? What do you don't like about trade deadline day? You can hit us up on Twitter at the AHL Report. And of course, you can reach Rick at All Habs on Twitter, and you can find me at Flyers Rule. This is a really packed show, Rick. Thanks so much for joining me today. We had a lot to cover. Should be an exciting weekend on the road with the Laval Rocket again this weekend.
Absolutely. Look forward to the games on the road and look forward to all the coverage as well.
Absolutely. So be sure to keep it locked on the AHL Report all weekend long. And of course, be sure to tune into all of the other podcasts offered here at Rocket Sports Radio. That would include Hab a Listen, Habs Unfiltered, and of course Habs 360 live on Saturdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. And we, of course, thank you for tuning in and listening to From the Press Box every week. This was our 22nd episode in our inaugural season, and we really enjoy bringing this information to you every week. So be sure to catch us again next Tuesday right here at the AHL Report. Until then, have a great week. Thanks so much for listening.